Letters and numbers like twinkling stars flashing in a stormy night sky. The logo of Studio Canal, a Canal Plus company. Blue water beneath a sunset sky darkens against the neon-lit Manhattan skyline. The logo of Miramax Films, followed by the concentric circles logo of Working Title. A young woman with a wool scarf wrapped around her neck, her blonde hair scraped back in an untidy ponytail, trudges through snow past a line of London taxis. On a hill, she gets out of a cab with a suitcase and two bags and strides up the driveway of a grey Cotswold stone house.
It all began on New Year's Day in my 32nd year of being single. Once again, I found myself on my own and going to my mother's annual turkey curry buffet. Every year she tries to fix me up with some bushy-haired middle-aged boar, and I feared this year would be no exception.
There you are, dumpling.
My mum, a strange creature from a time when a gherkin was still the height of sophistication.
Doyle's Pam. Hello, Bridget.
Third drawer from the top, Una, under the mini gherkins. By the way, the Darcys are here. They brought Mark with them.
Ah, here we go.
You remember Mark? Used to play in his paddling pool. He's a barrister, very well off.
No, I don't remember.
He's divorced, apparently. His wife is Japanese. Very cruel race. Now, what are you going to put on?
This.
Oh, don't be silly, Bridget. Never get a boyfriend if you look like you've wandered out of Auschwitz. Now run upstairs, laid out something lovely on your bed.
Looking doubtful, Bridget goes upstairs, reappearing in a frumpy patterned pinafore dress over a red blouse. She peers cautiously into a room full of people.
Great. I was wearing a carpet.
Here she is, my little Bridget.
Hi, Uncle Geoffrey.
Had a drink?
No.
No? Come on, then.
Actually, not my uncle. Someone who insists I call him uncle while he gropes my ass and asks me the question dreaded by all singletons.
So, how's your love life?
Super. Thanks, Uncle G.
Still no fellow then, eh? I don't know.
You career girls can't put it off forever, you know. Tick-tock.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, darling.
How's it going?
Torture. Your mother's trying to fix you up with some divorcee. Human rights barrister, pretty nasty beast, apparently.
Who? Ding dong. Maybe this time Mum had got it right.
Come on, why don't we see if Mark fancies a gherkin? Mark?
Maybe this was the mysterious Mr. Wright I'd been waiting my whole life to meet.
You remember Bridget?
Maybe not.
She used to run around your lawn with no clothes on, remember?
No, not as such.
Come and look at your gravy, Pam. I think it's going to need sieving.
Of course it doesn't need sieving. Just stir it, Una. Yes, of course. I'll be right there. Sorry, lumpy gravy calls.
Mark, with a reindeer design on his jumper, looks witheringly.
So? Are you staying at your parents' for New Year?
Yes. You?
Oh, no. I was in London. I had a party last night, so I'm afraid I'm a bit hungover. Wish I could be lying with my head in the toilet like all normal people. New Year's resolution, drink less. Oh, and quit smoking. Oh. And keep New Year's resolutions. stop talking total nonsense to strangers. In fact, stop talking full stop.
Yes, well, perhaps it's time to eat.
With a curt smile, he goes to the food table.
Apparently, she lives just round the corner from you.
Mother, I do not need a blind date, particularly not with some verbally incontinent spinster who smokes like a chimney, drinks like a fish, and dresses like her mother.
Bridget, having overheard, smiles lamely.
Yummy. Turkey curry. My favourite. And that was it. Right there. Right there. That was the moment. I suddenly realised that unless something changed soon, I was going to live a life where my major relationship was with a bottle of wine. And I'd finally die fat and alone and be found 3 weeks later half-eaten by Alsatians. Or I was about to turn into Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction.
Don't wanna be
Bridget is by herself at home in pajamas, smoking and drinking, watching TV. She gets up off the sofa and checks her answering machine.
You have no messages.
Starring Renée Zellweger, Colin Firth, Hugh Grant, Jim Broadbent and Gemma Jones. Casting by Michelle Guiche. Line producer Peter McAleese. Music supervisor Nick Angel. Bridget guzzles down a glass of red wine, then mimes to the song. Co-producers Deborah Haywood's Liza Chasin. Original score Patrick Doyle. Costume designer Rachel Fleming. Production designer Gemma Jackson. Editor Martin Walsh.
When I was young, I never needed anyone. And making love was just for fun. Those days are gone.
Director of Photography Stuart Dryberg, Executive Producer Helen Fielding, based on the novel by Helen Fielding. Screenplay by Helen Fielding, Andrew Davis, Richard Curtis. Produced by Tim Bevan, Eric Feller, Jonathan Cavendish. Directed by Sharon Maguire. Bridget Jones's Diary.
And so I made a major decision. I had to make sure that next year I wouldn't end up shit-faced and listening to sad FM, easy listening for the over 30s. I decided to take control of my life and start a diary to tell the truth about Bridget Jones. The whole truth. Resolution number one.
Ooh.
Obviously, we'll lose 20 pounds. Number two, always put last night's pants in the laundry basket. Equally important, we'll find nice, sensible boyfriend to go out with and not continue to form romantic attachments to any of the following. Alcoholics, workaholics, commitment phobics, peeping toms, megalomaniacs, emotional fuckwits, or perverts. And especially, we'll not fantasize about a particular person who embodies all these things.
Lift doors open to reveal a smooth-faced man with floppy brown hair, an open-necked shirt, hooded eyelids, and a confident smirk on his lips.
Unfortunately, he just happens to be my boss, editor-in-chief Daniel Cleaver. And for various slightly unfair reasons relating to this year's Christmas party, I suspect he does not fantasize about me.
Bridget, wearing a dangly tinsel headdress, cigarette in one hand, microphone in the other, is standing on an office table. Daniel winces as he watches her.
Or maybe I'm wrong.
In a pink short-sleeved top, she looks across at Daniel through the glass panels of his office. He gestures, but it's to a chubby man behind her, who checks his watch in response.
Ah. Happy New Year, Mr. Fitzherbert.
Happy New Year, Brenda.
Mr. Fitzherbert. Tits pervert, more like. Daniel's boss who stares freely at my breasts with no idea who I am or what I do.
Morning, I need that Kafka's motorbike released by 11.
Perpetua. Slightly senior and therefore thinks she's in charge of me. Most of the time I just want to staple things to her head.
Publicity?
Well, all I asked if he wanted to come on a mini break to Paris.
Daily call from Jude, best friend, head of investment at Breitling's Bank, who spends most of her time trapped in the ladies' toilet crying over fuckwit boyfriend.
Are you needy? Am I codependent?
No, you're not. It's not you. You're lovely. It's Vile Richard. Oh, he's just a big knobhead with no knob.
Daniel's standing by her desk.
Is some people's opinion of Kafka. But they couldn't be more wrong. This book is a searing vision of the wounds our century has inflicted on traditional masculinity. It's positively Vonnegutesque. Thank you for calling, Professor Leavis.
Guest list for launch party.
Ah.
He turns.
F.R. Leavis?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. The F.R. Leavis, who wrote Mass Civilization and Minority Culture?
Mm-hmm.
The F.R. Leavis who died in 1978?
As she nods, the word fuck appears on the screen. Later, Bridget's in a restaurant with friends.
Emergency summit with Urban Family for coherent discussion of career crisis. Fuck 'em.
Fuck the lot of them. Tell them they can stick fucking Leavis up their fucking arses.
Good, good. Yes, that's very useful, very useful.
Shazza, journalist, likes to say fuck a lot.
Jude, what would you do if one of your assistants made a harmless little mistake like that?
I'd fire you, Breach.
Excellent.
Is that Cleaver chap still as cute as ever?
Oh, God, yes.
Then I think a well-timed blowjob's probably the best answer.
Oh, you love it.
Are you that chap that sang that song?
Yes, yes, I am.
Tom, 80s pop icon who only wrote one hit record, then retired because he found that one record was quite enough to get him laid for the whole of the 90s.
Oh, great song.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Total puff, of course.
More vodka?
No.
Yes, fill her up, goddammit. Fill her up.
At least now I'm in my 30s, I can hold my drink.
She falls out of a taxi.
Oops. Mind the step.
She's fine. Drive on.
Bridget, in a very short skirt, comes into the office, watched by Daniel and Mr. Fitzherbert.
Afternoon, Bridget. What do you mean you're going on holiday?
Fitzherbert strides past Bridget with a scornful look. Bridget's PC tells her she has a mail message from Daniel Cleaver, subject serious problem.
Yes.
Bridget, wincing, glances up towards Daniel's office. He's on the phone. His message reads, you appear to have forgotten your skirt. It goes on, is skirt off sick? Bridget looks up, Daniel in a swing chair is engrossed in his phone call, smoking a cigarette, feet on his desk. Bridget looks round to see if the coast is clear.
Message, Mr. Cleaver. I'm appalled by message. Skirt is demonstrably neither sick nor absent. Appalled by management's blatantly sizeist attitude to skirt. Suggest management sick, not skirt.
It's quite ridiculous.
Blushing, she sends the message and looks across to see its effect. Leaning on her clasped hands, she sees Daniel's eyes widen and a smile flicker across his lips. He swings round to face her.
Right, yeah. No, I understand that.
She smiles at him and pouts in a self-justifying sort of way.
Very bad start to the year. Have been seduced by informality of messaging medium into flirting with office scoundrel. Will persevere with resolution to find a nice, sensible man. Will put a stop to flirting. First thing tomorrow. Good plan.
Bridget, in an even shorter black skirt with black tights and a see-through flesh-coloured top over a black bra, struts past Daniel in a meeting room.
If walking past office was attempt to demonstrate presence of skirt, can only say that it has failed parlously. Cleave.
Shut up, please. I am very busy and important. P.S. How dare you sexually harass me in this impertinent manner?
Message Jones. Mortified to have caused offence. Will avoid all non-PC overtones in future. Deeply apologetic. P.S. Like your tits in that top.
Daniel, standing by a window, is staring across at her.
Mustn't read too much into it, though.
She does.
And it all began, of course, with some very irresponsible emailing over Bridget's non-existent skirt.
A lift door opens and Bridget, back from her fantasy, steps inside, followed by Daniel, with Perpetua running after him.
Daniel, the New York office for you.
Yeah, tell him I'll get back.
Bridget tries to keep a straight face. She's standing between Daniel and a tall, balding man who gets out at the next floor.
Daniel.
Jones.
Evening, Kenneth.
Evening, Daniel.
Mr. Fitzherbert joins them. Daniel fondles her bottom.
If you've got a moment, I'd like a word before you leave tonight.
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
They all get out.
I'll see you in a sec.
Excellent. And Brenda?
Yes?
At the Kafka's motorbike thing, I thought it might be fun if you introduce me before I introduce him. That lovely sense of occasion.
Certainly, sir.
Bridget smiles to herself.
Brenda, what are you doing tonight?
Actually, I'm busy.
All right. Well, that's a shame. I thought it might be a charitable thing to take your skirt out for dinner and try and fatten it up a bit. Mm. Maybe you could come too. What about tomorrow?
No, tomorrow's the launch.
Oh, yes, of course. Possibly the worst book ever published.
Well, in the end, that's not the headline we've gone for.
Next night.
Let's see, shall we? Night, Daniel.
Right. No pressure, Bridge, but your whole future happiness now depends on how you behave on this one social occasion.
Right. What should I do?
First, look gorgeous.
Bridget shaves her legs, a cigarette dangling from her lips. She clips her toenails and buffs her thighs, applies a waxing strip to her bikini line, and pulls it off.
Oh! Oh! God! Two, then totally ignore Daniel and suck up to famous authors.
Salman, Salman, Salman.
Circulate. Oozing intelligence.
Isn't it terrible about Chechnya?
She hoovers as she rehearses.
Introduce people with thoughtful details, such as Sheila, this is Daniel. Daniel, this is Sheila. Sheila enjoys horse riding and comes from New Zealand. Daniel enjoys publishing and comes...
All over your face?
Exactly.
Excuse me. I'm terribly sorry to interrupt you when you're having dinner. It's just
yes.
That...
Yes, it was me. Yes. 9 years ago. No current plans to record anything else. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's just that your chair is on my wife's coat. Your chair on the...
Of course
the leg of the... Thank you so much. Thank you.
Major dilemma. If actually do, by some terrible chance, end up in Infragrande, surely these would be most attractive at crucial moment. However, chances of reaching crucial moment greatly increase by wearing these. Scary stomach-holding-in pants very popular with grannies the world over. Huh. Tricky. Very tricky.
She rejects a lacy black thong for large elasticated pants, which she pulls up over her rounded belly. With one roller in her hair and wearing a pink vest, she preens in front of her mirror. At 6:02 in a coat over a low-cut dress, she hurries smiling across Piccadilly Circus.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the launch of Kafka's Motorbike, the greatest book about time, and here to introduce it is Mr. Fitzherbert. Oh, Fitzherbert. Okay, circulate, oozing intelligence. Ignore Daniel and be fabulous with everyone else. I am the intellectual equal of everyone else here. Ooh.
It's like a whole theory of short fiction and of the novella, you know? And, of course, the problem with Martin's definition of the novella is that it really only applies to him.
That doesn't sound like Martin. Not.
I mean, I could be wrong. What do you think?
Salman Rushdie addresses her.
Do you know where the toilets are? Huh? Stay calm. Can't get any worse.
She grabs a glass of champagne and sees Mark.
What are you doing here?
I've been asking myself the same question. I came with a colleague. So how are you?
Oh, apart from being very disappointed not to see my favourite reindeer jumper again, I'm well.
Anyone going to introduce me?
Introduce people with thoughtful details. Perpetua. This is Mark Darcy. Mark's a prematurely middle-aged prick with a cruel-raced ex-wife. Perpetua's a fat-ass old bag who spends her time bossing me around. Maybe not.
Anyone going to introduce me?
Perpetua. This is Mark Darcy. Mark's a top barrister. Oh, he comes from Grafton Underwood. Perpetua is one of my work colleagues.
Hey, Mark. I know you by reputational force.
Natasha. This is Bridget Jones. Bridget, this is Natasha. Natasha is a top attorney and specialises in family law. Bridget works in publishing and used to play naked in my paddling pool.
How odd. Perpetua, how's the house hunt going?
Disaster. I didn't go into it with you.
Oh, have I? That man is gorgeous. Hi, it's Mark. Just give me time. Give me time.
Daniel's with Rushdie.
A searing vision. Can you remember the rest of this?
Of the wounds our century has inflicted on traditional masculinity, positively bonobitesque, obviously.
Listen, you don't know where the loos are here, do you?
Yes.
Thanks.
Mark looks at Daniel with undisguised dislike. Bridget tests the microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Mark watches her with interest.
Oi! Oi! Sorry,
working. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the launch of Kafka's Motorbike, the greatest book of our time. Obviously, except for your books, Mr. Rushdie, which are also very good. And Lord Archer, yours aren't bad either. Anyway, what I mean is, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming to the launch of one of the top 30 books of our time. Anyway, at least, and here to introduce it properly is the man we all call
Tits Pervert.
Mr.
Tits Pervert.
Mr.
Tits Pervert.
Fitzherbert. Because that is his name.
Her colleagues cringe.
Mr. Fitzherbert, thank you.
Mark lowers his head with embarrassment.
Thank you, Brenda. Just switch this on.
Later, Bridget, with a glass and a cigarette in hand, looks depressed. Mark looks over to her standing by the drinks table. Nobody's
ever. Excuse me.
Daniel appears.
Jones. Sodomore. It was a brilliant, postmodernist masterpiece of oratorical fireworks, really. You're looking very sexy, Jones. I think I'm going to have to take you out to dinner now, whether you like it or not, okay? Come on, get your stuff.
Daniel leads her away, watched by Mark, who seems put out. Later, in a restaurant.
So how do you feel about this whole situation in Churchtown? Isn't it a nightmare?
I couldn't give a fuck, Jones. Now, look, how do you know, Arcee Darcy?
Apparently I used to, run around naked in his paddling pool.
I bet you did, you dirty bitch.
What about you?
Same, yeah. No, I was, best man at his wedding. Knew him from Cambridge. He was a mate.
And then what?
And then, nothing.
You don't need to protect him. He's no friend of mine.
Well, then, many years later, I made the somewhat catastrophic mistake of introducing him to my fiancée.
A flashback.
And,
a door is opened, revealing two people naked.
I couldn't say in all honesty I've ever quite forgiven him.
God, so he's a nasty bastard. Well, he's a dull bastard.
Yes, I think that's fair. Anyway, fuck him. Listen, don't let him ruin our evening. Why don't you have some more wine and tell me more about practicing French kissing with the other girls at school, because that's a very good story.
It wasn't French kissing.
Don't care, make it up. It's an order, Jones. So, how about a drink at my place? Totally innocent, no funny business, just full sex.
No. I should get a taxi. But thank you for the lovely dinner.
He touches her cheek.
It's a pleasure, Jones.
Slowly, he pulls her towards him, and languidly, they kiss. In his spacious, ultra-modern flat, Daniel carries Bridget towards his tall leather sofa, lying her down and continuing to kiss her. Softly, they roll onto the floor. Bridget on top of Daniel. Daniel on top of Bridget.
Now, these are very silly little boots, Jones. And this is a very silly little dress. And, these are, fuck me, absolutely enormous pants. No, don't apologise, I like them. Hello, mummy.
Floppy-haired Daniel kisses Bridget again.
I'm sorry, I have to have another look. They're too good to be true. There's nothing to be embarrassed by. I'm wearing something quite similar myself. Here, I'll show you. This time that you will
Bridget, with a smile on her face, walks across Piccadilly Circus, where the electronic board reads, Wednesday the something, weight £131, have replaced food with good sex, cigarettes 22, all post-coital. She and Daniel lie back exhausted in bed.
That was fantastic. Oh. Mm. Hey.
Daniel?
Yeah?
What happens at the office?
Well, I'm glad you asked that. You see, it's a publishing house. So that means that people write things for us, and then we print out all the pages and fasten them together and make them into what we call a book, James.
Now, do you think people will notice?
Notice what?
Us. Working together, sleeping together.
Hang on a minute, James. Just slow down. It started on Tuesday and now it's Thursday. It's not exactly a long-term relationship yet, is it?
Very bad.
Bridget prizes herself out of Daniel's arms to answer the phone.
Bridget Jones, wanton sex goddess with a very bad man between her thighs. Mum. Hi.
It's a truth universally acknowledged that the moment one area of your life starts going okay, another part of it falls spectacularly to pieces.
Ah, anyone else want to have it off? Don't be shy, madam. French. Have it off. With the wise crack egg peeler. Now, nice firm grip. Put it in the hole. Down, up, down, up, down, and off it comes in your hand. Oh, mind the overspray.
Pam's egg peeler squirts some creamy liquid. Later over coffee.
Darling, if I came in with my knickers on my head, he wouldn't notice. I spent 35 years cleaning his house, washing his clothes, bringing up his children.
I'm your child too.
To be honest, darling, having children isn't all it's cracked up to be. Given my chance again, I'm not sure I'd have any. And now it's the winter of my life and I haven't actually got anything of my own. I've got no power, no real career, no sex life. Got no life at all. I'm like the grasshopper who sang all summer. I'm like Germaine sodding gear.
Greer.
Well, anyway, I'm not having it. And I've been talent spotted. Julian thinks I've got great potential.
Who's Julian?
Hey, from the Home Shopping Channel. Comes into the store to have his colours done.
Well, potential for what?
As a demonstrator. On his cable show. You know, his assistant. Apparently it's the highest rated show on the channel. Well, apart from the one, you know, where the fat people beat up their relatives. Oop, I'm his whiz. Have you heard from Mark Darcy?
Goodbye, Mum.
Pam gives Bridget an air kiss and hurries away from the in-store coffee bar towards a man with bouffant grey-black hair and a tanned complexion.
Julian.
Bridget watches as Julian kisses Pam on both cheeks. Pam takes his arm and they glide off, much to Bridget's bewilderment. Later, she travels home on a train.
And a few weeks later, it got lots worse.
Look at this.
Her father, Colin, is lying on the sitting room floor watching TV.
One of my own personal recommendations is this absolutely stunning matching necklace and earring set.
Bridget's eyes widen as she sees her mother in a fuchsia pink suit, holding the earrings on a velvet cushion, smiling coyly at the camera and looking adoringly at Julian.
In a lovely mock gold finish, the exact replica of those worn at Wimbledon in 1993 by Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Kent.
Colin switches off.
Wow. Has she actually moved out then?
Apparently she and this tangerine-tinted buffoon are suddenly an item. Half our friends have had them round to bloody dinner. She's even taking jaundiced Julian to Una Oakley's Tarts and Vickers party. That's not the Pamela I knew. That's cruel.
Well, still, could be a golden opportunity. If you spent the entire party flirting with other women, it would drive Mum wild with jealousy.
Right?
That's how I got my man.
Have you got a boyfriend? A real one?
I have, Father. I have. And he's perfect.
Bridget, in sunglasses and a scarf on her head, comes out of her door. Pouting like a starlet, she throws a bag into the back of Daniel's open-top Mercedes and gets in next to him. He growls at her appreciatively and puts his arm around her.
Hurrah!
am no longer tragic spinster, but proper girlfriend of bona fide a sex god. So committed that he's taking me on a full-blown mini-break holiday weekend.
Just promise me we don't have to sit in any little boats and read poncy poetry to each other.
He's also agreed to protect me at Uncle Jeffrey's hideous Tarts and Vickers fancy dress party. This can't be just shagging. A mini-break means true love. Suddenly feel like screen goddess and manner of Grace Kelly.
Her Grace Kelly-style scarf flies away.
Though perhaps ever so slightly less elegant under pressure.
She tries to smooth down her windblown hair.
It's very quiet here, isn't it? Are we the only guests?
We have a wedding this weekend. I believe there are just four of you not involved.
You do the boats, I'll do the tea.
Mark is coming downstairs with Natasha.
Oh, Jesus.
Hello there.
Hi.
Oh, well. Take it you're also heading for the Alconbury's rockery.
Yes, that's right.
I brought Natasha. Get a bit of work done, thought I might make it a not entirely wasted weekend.
How interesting. What a gripping life you do lead. Yeah, well, I'll see you upstairs in a second.
Daniel, in his suede jacket, walks past his former old friend, leaving the dramatically windblown Bridget looking challengingly at Mark. He walks past her, and she goes upstairs. Later, Mark is rowing a boat. Natasha's facing him, reading a document.
Well, the weakness of their case lies in the deposition they made on August 30th.
Season of mist and mellow fruitlessness.
Oh, fuck me, I love Keats. Have you heard this one? There was a young woman from Ealing who had a peculiar feeling. She lay on her back and opened her crack and pissed all over the ceiling. Oh, bollocks.
Bridget and Daniel in separate boats collide.
I'm
king of the world!
He stands with one leg in each boat. Mark watches wistfully at Bridget roaring with laughter. A sudden cigarette dangles from Daniel's mouth.
So childish.
Yes.
Mark starts to row, glancing again at Bridget, enjoying herself.
Oh, you're working too hard, mate.
Later in bed.
Daniel.
Yes, Bridget?
That thing you just did is actually illegal in several countries.
That is, of course, the major reason I'm so thrilled to be living in Britain today.
Yes, I can't understand why the Prime Minister doesn't mention it more in his speeches.
You should write to him about it.
I intend to. Daniel.
Bridget?
Do you love me?
Shut up or I'll do it again.
Do you love me?
Right. You asked for it.
And over you go.
I'm going to give you something to bite on. Yeah. Okay. Pop this in your mouth, don't it? You're begging for it.
Below their window, on an open-air terrace, a waiter is clearing up after the wedding reception. The bride and groom are nearby in the garden, dancing cheek to cheek. Bridget wakes to find Daniel already dressed. She looks across at him and smiles.
I gotta go back to town. Meeting's come up.
On a Sunday?
No, the meeting's first thing tomorrow. I've gotta work on some figures.
We could just pop into the party for a minute.
Bridget, I'm really, really sorry. Early. I just can't do it. I've gotta head back.
Listen, Daniel, if you've changed your mind, you can just say so. Because honestly, I don't see what could be so important.
No, well, you wouldn't, would you? Because you don't have the faintest bloody idea of just how much trouble the company's in. You swan in your short skirt and your sexy see-through blouse and fanning around with press releases. You know, this is the Americans flying in because they're thinking of shutting us down, for fuck's sake.
Bridget pulls her knees up to her chest on the bed.
Sorry. I'm sorry, Bridget. I'm being a prat.
He sits on the bed next to her and strokes her hair. She gives him a rueful smile.
Look, I'm going to arrange a lovely car to come and pick you up and take you back to London after the party, OK? If you have to travel alone, travel in style. And, I also think it's very important that you win this costume competition.
He puts a bunny girl headdress on her.
Good. Good start.
He reaches for something else.
Now then, Miss Jones, where does this go?
A fluffy white rabbit's tail completes her bunny girl costume.
Oh, well,
Here we go. Trying hard to fight off a vision of Mum and Auntie Una in fishnet tights. Seems unnatural. Wrong, even, for 60-year-olds to dress up as prostitutes and priests on a Sunday afternoon.
She strides up the drive with her breasts bulging out of her costume, and her mouth opens in dismay.
Oh, holy Jesus.
Aunt Una.
Bridget!
Where are all the other tarts and liquors?
Oh, dear. Didn't Geoffrey call you? Geoffrey, didn't you telephone Colin and Bridget?
How's my little Bridget?
Geoffrey squeezes her tail.
Geoffrey.
So, where's this chap of yours, then, eh?
Ah, yes, well, he had to work, so...
Ha! Nice tail. Off they run.
Behind her, Mark and Natasha.
Bizarre what some men find attractive.
With Mark's parents.
God.
Darling!
Geoffrey!
What on earth are you wearing? You look like a common prostitute.
Yes, well, that was actually the point.
Say hi to Julian.
Hello, Julian.
My dear, you and your mother could be sisters. And what a lovely bracelet. It's what I call an all-rounder, sort of thing one can wear with anything to any occasion.
Have you spoken to my dad?
Yes. He's behaving most bizarrely. I think he was actually trying to flirt with Penny Husband's Boswell, poor thing. She was very frightened. She's only just had her ovaries done.
Bridget's father is dressed as a vicar. Pam whisks Julian away.
I don't know what you ever saw him.
In the lush summer garden, Bridget finds her father sitting on a giant toadstool, smoking.
Didn't tell you either.
No, I didn't spend as much as Bernard, thank God.
Bernard nearby is wearing the purple robes of a bishop with a mitre on his head.
Oh. I'm sorry, Dad.
Why, she looked at me.
Well, she loves you, really. You love each other. It's only a temporary glitch.
Is it? I don't know. I don't know.
Bridget returns to the party.
Ah, Bridget! There you are! Don't worry, you're not the only one. This is Penny. Geoffrey didn't get in touch with her either.
I'm sorry?
I was just saying, Geoffrey didn't contact you either to tell you that the Tarts and Vickers concept had gone out of the window.
Oh, yes, he did.
Oh, right. Lovely dress. Very exotic.
Penny, in a low-cut pink blouse, sweeps away in a huff.
What a shame you couldn't bring your boyfriend, Bridget. What's his name? David? Darren?
Daniel Cleaver.
Oh, is he a friend of yours, Mark?
Absolutely not.
I hope he's good enough for our little Bridget.
I think I can say with total confidence, absolutely not.
Well, I'm sure he'd say the same about you, given your past behaviour.
Sorry?
I think you know what I mean.
Mark!
As Natasha appears, Bridget faces Mark with her arms folded reprovingly. He walks away carrying two paper plates with a single sausage on each plate. Bridget spies an older woman in a low-cut top and tight trousers creeping behind a hedge.
Hmm. Looks like Auntie Shirley didn't get the message either.
Later, Bridget gets out of a car and rings the doorbell. Daniel pops his head out of an upstairs window.
Hi.
Really wanted to see a friendly face.
Oh, no, listen, I tell you what, I have an idea. Let me finish this. Well, you go home, have a long hot bath, and I'll call round and we'll have dinner later, OK?
Is there someone here?
Not that I'm aware of. Unless that Bosnian family's moved in again. Bastards.
Bridget, still in her bunny outfit under her coat, walks off in the direction of the noise. She stands in the doorway of Daniel's bedroom.
I'm sorry. Sorry. I'm going mad.
Listen, I am feeling really burned, actually. I should have been there today.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry, but at least I got a hell of a lot of work done, as you can see.
Yeah.
Just give me one more hour, OK?
It's fine. That's fine. I will go home and de-bunny. Oh. And you know, last night, when I said that I loved you.
Hmm?
I didn't mean it. I was being ironic.
Oh, God, yeah, I know.
All right.
Thank you, madam.
By his front door, she notices a pink cardigan on the coat stand. She looks at Daniel and back at the cardigan and drops her bag.
Bridget!
She hurries back into the bedroom and pushes open the bathroom door. A dark-haired girl is sitting coolly on the side of the bath, holding a design portfolio on her lap to hide her nakedness. As Bridget stares in disbelief, Daniel comes up behind her.
This is Lara from the New York office. Lara, this is Bridget.
Hey there.
Bridget turns to face Daniel.
I thought you said she was thin.
Bridget, lowering her eyes, hurries out past Daniel. Later, she wanders through a quiet, covered market, a motorized trolley moving about behind her. She's still in her outfit with the white satin rabbit's ears on her head, her face in shock. Back at home, she sits in her bath, tights and stockings hanging from the shower curtain rail above her head. Her face wet with tears, she pulls off a false eyelash and flicks it away. Later, she lies on her sofa in her dressing gown, watching a video.
I was hoping that you would want to be a part of it. I'm 36 years old. It may be my last chance to have a child,
Alex.
The film is Fatal Attraction with Glenn Close. The Glenn Close character slumps against the bathroom wall with a bullet hole in her chest and sinks back into the bath. Bridget, smoking a cigarette, changes channels to two lions mating.
The male penetrates the female and leaves. Coitus is brief and perfunctory. The female, all there is to do now.
At the office, Bridget stares at Lara leaning across Daniel as she explains something. He glances uncomfortably at Bridget. Bridget knocks on Daniel's glass door.
We've had very good response to the Teddy Knows Best teaser campaign and had various local radio bids for all three interviews, which is good.
Stop
but
it.
It's
I feel terrible. The thing is, with Lara and me, well, you know.
No, you'll have to fill me in.
Well, the truth is, we're the same, Bridge, you and me. You know, we're two people of a certain age looking for the moment to commit and finding it really hard. And I just think that in the end, it's got to be something, you know, extraordinary, something which makes us go that extra mile. And I think Lara and, I don't know, being American or something to do with confidence and being so, well, young, you know. Well, we've become very close.
Well, you've only just met her. She flew in yesterday. Who? Silly Bridget. You haven't only just met her.
No. No, I got to know her pretty well when we were in the New York office together.
Oh.
Oh, fuck. There's no easy way to say this, but, I wanted you to be the first to know that we're engaged.
Bridget nods blankly and looks away from Daniel. She nods again as she takes in the news and turns to the door. She sits hunched behind her computer screen, looking away from Daniel's office.
At times like this, continuing with one's life seems impossible, and eating the entire contents of one's fridge seems inevitable. I have two choices: to give up and accept permanent state of spinsterhood and eventual eating by alsatians, or not. And this time I choose not. I will not be defeated by a bad man and an American stick insect. Instead, I choose vodka. And Chaka Khan.
At home, she gulps down several shots of vodka and collapses onto the floor. Her whole recently humiliating life flashes before her. She cycles furiously in a gym and throws an empty vodka bottle into a bin, followed by a book called What Men Want and a handful of unsmoked cigarettes, a book called How Men Think, an empty wine bottle, How to Make Men Want What They Don't Think They Want, and closes the lid. In their place on the shelf, books on How to Get What You Want, Life Without Men, and Women Who Love Men Are Mad. In between more furious cycling, she circles newspaper ads for jobs in TV, including one for a presenter. She falls off the exercise bike. Wrapped in a scarf and coat, she exudes new confidence as she goes to an interview.
Why do you want to be in television?
Well, I've realised that I've become deeply committed to communicating to the public the up-to-the-moment and in-depth news, both political and ecological.
What do you think of the El Niño phenomenon?
It's a blip. I think basically Latin music is on its way out.
So why do you want to work in television?
Because I'm passionately committed to communicating with children. They are the future.
Do you have any children of your own?
Oh, Christ, no. Yuck. Sorry.
So, why do you want to work in television?
I've got to leave my current job because I've shagged my boss.
Fair enough. Start on Monday. We'll see how we go. Oh, and, incidentally, at Sit Up Britain, no one ever gets sacked for shagging the boss. That's a matter of principle.
The leather-jacketed producer gives Bridget a cheeky smile. Back in her office.
Bridget, come on, Ed. I mean, I know it's been awkward as arse, but there's no need to leave.
No, actually there is. I've been offered a job in television.
Television?
Mm. And they want me to start straight away. So I've got to leave in about, 3 minutes. So,
Well, just hold it right there, Miss Jones. I'm sorry to inform you, but I think you'll find that by contract you're expected to give at least 6 weeks' notice.
Ah, yes, well, you know, I thought with the company being in so much trouble and all, you wouldn't really miss the person who waltzes in a see-through top and fannies about with the press releases.
Bridget!
I want to hear this. Because if she gives one inch, I'm going to fire her bony little bottom anyway for being totally spineless. What?
Well, I just think you should know that,
Simon.
You know, there are lots of prospects here for a talented
Daniel,
boss.
We...
Yeah, just give me a minute, will you, Simon? Thanks.
Right-ho, boss man.
Lots of prospects for a person who, you know, perhaps for personal reasons has been slightly overlooked professionally.
Thank you, Daniel. That is very good to know. But if staying here means working within 10 yards of you, frankly, I'd rather have a job wiping Saddam Hussein's arse. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, take F-T-C-T. Well, bye, everyone.
Watched by an admiring Perpetua and everyone else in the office, Bridget picks up her jacket and marches upstairs, beaming with pride. Everyone turns to look at Daniel.
Oh, just sod off.
Hello and welcome to Sit Up Britain, the current affairs show.
Okay, everybody, it is bonfire night and we are on fire. We have live fire station feeds from Newcastle, Swansea, Sheffield and Lewisham, just poised for tragedy. Bridget Jones, where are you?
I'm here, Richard.
Put on some more makeup. I want you on camera.
Oh,
I'm thinking miniskirt, I'm thinking fireman's helmet. I want you pointing a hose, I want you sliding down the pole and then go straight into the interview.
Great. I'll do it.
The floor manager takes instructions.
No problem. Fine, right. So, you drop in a shot and then interview Chief Fireman Bevan. Yup, yup, yup. Go, 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 go!
Go?
Oh, no. We're going to firefighters in Newcastle first.
Stop! Climb back up, climb back up! On you in 30 seconds.
Okay.
Bridget in a fireman's helmet tries to climb back up the pole.
Neville, what the fuck is going on? She's supposed to be sliding down the pole, not climbing up it.
Go, 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 go!
Okay.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Bridget's bottom fills the TV screen.
Okay, we're out of time, we're out of time. Just wind her up.
Well, that seems to be about all we've got time for down here in Lewisham. Chief Officer Bevan, thank you very much. Excellent fire station. And now, back to the studio.
Her sliding bottom in tights is played over and over. Bridget stares forlornly at the clip.
Excellent. National laughing stock.
have bottom the size of Brazil. Am daughter of broken home. Am rubbish at everything. And, oh God, am having dinner with Magda and Jeremy. The only thing worse than smug married couple.
Lots of smug married couples. Right, everyone, this is Bridget. Bridge, this is Hugo and Jane, and obviously you know Cosmo and Woney.
Hi, Bridge.
This is Alistair and Henrietta.
Hello.
Julia and Michael.
Hey.
Joanne and Paul.
Hello.
And Jeremy's partners from Chambers. This is Natasha Glenville and Mark Darcy.
Hi there.
Hello.
Not in your bunny girl outfit today?
No. We bunnies only wear our tails on very special occasions.
Right, B, sit yourself down.
Right.
She sits at the head of the table.
Hey, Bridge. How's your love life?
Oh.
Still going out with that publishing chappy?
No.
Right. Never dip your nib in the office ink.
Right.
You really ought to hurry up and get sprogged up, you know, old girl. Times are running out. Tick-tock.
Yes, yes. Tell me, is it 1 in 4 marriages that ends in divorce now, or 1 in 3?
1 in 3.
Seriously, though, office is full of single girls in their 30s. Fine physical specimens, but they just can't seem to hold down a chap.
Yes, why is it there are so many unmarried women in their 30s these days, Bridget?
All 10 people stare at her.
Well, I don't know. Suppose it doesn't help that underneath our clothes, our entire bodies are covered in scales.
Her fellow guests look away in embarrassment. Later, she's putting on her jacket in the hall. Mark appears on the stairs behind her.
I very much enjoyed your Lewisham fire report, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, well. So, it didn't work out with Daniel Cleaver?
No, it didn't.
I'm delighted to hear it.
Look, are you and Cosmo in this together? I mean, you seem to go out of your way to try to make me feel like a complete idiot every time I see you. And you really needn't bother. I already feel like an idiot most of the time anyway. With or without a fireman's pole. That'll be my taxi. Good night.
Look, I'm sorry if I've been...
What?
I don't think you're an idiot at all. I mean, there are elements of the ridiculous about you. Your mother's pretty interesting. And you really are an appallingly bad public speaker. And you tend to let whatever's in your head come out of your mouth without much consideration of the consequences. I realised that when I met you at the turkey curry buffet that I was unforgivably rude and wearing a reindeer jumper that my mother had given me the day before. But the thing is, what I'm trying to say very inarticulately is that, in fact, perhaps despite appearances, I like you very much.
Apart from the smoking and the drinking and the vulgar mother and the verbal diarrhea.
No, I like you very much, just as you are.
Mark, we really are making progress on the case in here. Jeremy's had the most brilliant idea.
Right. Right.
Finger clicking Natasha goes back upstairs.
I must go. Because... Well... Bye.
Someone exactly like you.
Later, she sucks on a straw in a cocktail bar with Tom, Shazza, and Jude.
Just as you are. Well, not thinner, not cleverer, not with slightly bigger breasts and slightly smaller nose.
Bemused, Jude looks across at Shazza.
Well, fuck me.
Shazza looks at Tom, who looks back at Bridget.
But this is someone you hate, right?
Yes, I hate him.
Two toy nodding dogs nod at Bridget on top of her phone.
November 9th, wait.
£138. Cigarettes, 3. Birthday, 33.
Okay, Bridget, see if you can get it right this time. The verdict in the Agani Heaney case is expected today. Get yourself down at the High Court. I want a hard-headed interview.
Bridget eyes the newspaper.
You do know the Agani Heaney case?
Yes, of course. Big case. Featuring someone called Agani Heaney.
Or two people called Kafir Agani and Eleanor Heaney.
That's the one.
She's a British aid worker. He's a Kurdish freedom fighter. The government want to extradite him home, where he'll certainly be executed. She's married to him, and they fought for 5 years to keep him here. Today is the decision.
Well, that's exciting.
Yes, it is. So what are you waiting for?
I'm suddenly hard-headed journalist, ruthlessly committed to promoting justice and liberty. Nothing can distract me from my dedication to the pursuit of truth. Well, almost nothing.
Right, I'll just pop to the shop quickly for some C's. 14p for the polos and the packet of wheat crunchies.
Packet of embassy, please.
I'm sorry, I'm not quite fit.
Mark.
Good afternoon.
Hi. You like me just the way I am.
Sorry?
Nothing.
Bridget! We fucked up utterly. Eleanor Heaney and Kafir Agani have come and gone.
Oh, God. I'll be sacked. Ooh. Did the others get interviews?
I don't know. I was having a slash. Actually, nobody got interviews.
So how do you know?
Because I was defending him and I told him not to give any interviews.
Look, I have a plan.
And action.
Mr. Darcy, you were defending Mr. Agani. You must be delighted.
Yes, well, Kafir Agani has spent his entire life defending the basic human rights of his own people, and today's verdict has been the result of 5 years of struggle by this woman, Eleanor Heaney, to save the man she loves from an extradition order that would have been tantamount to a death sentence.
Right. And Eleanor, over to you. Did you fancy Kafir the first time that you saw him?
This has been Bridget Jones for Sit Up Britain. With, let's face it, a bit of a crush now, actually. Good afternoon.
Bridget Jones, already a legend.
Bridget, laden with shopping bags, strides purposefully through a busy fruit and vegetable market after dark.
Oh, joy, I am broadcasting genius. Celebrating by cooking birthday feast for close friends. I have sneaking suspicion I'm also something of genius in the kitchen as well.
Thai flavour enhancing leek and celery together with string. Right, string. Perfect.
She stirs the vegetables tied with blue string.
Finely slice oranges and great zest.
She shuts the lid of a food mixer and switches on the juicer. Sauce splashed on her chest and face, she swigs some brandy.
Where the fuck is the fucking tuna? This is Bridget Jones for Sit Up Britain, searching for tuna.
Bridget Jones!
Hello, darling.
Hi, Mum.
I just wanted a bit of a chat.
Ouch! Careful, you ham-fisted cow!
The thing is, darling, between you and me, I'm not entirely sure that Julian isn't a bit of a shit.
Well, you know, Mum, I haven't really got time right now.
Why? I can't deny the sex is still very surprising. You know, the other night, quite unexpectedly, I was just dozing off and I felt this huge...
Bye, Mum. Ugh. Oh, what time do you call this? Oh!
Mark, in his immaculate pinstripe suit.
The door is open. I came to congratulate the new face of British current affairs.
He holds up a folded paper with the headline, Kafir Free Tells All to Bridget Jones.
But I see I may have come at a bad time.
He smiles faintly at her food-splattered chest.
How's it look?
Great. It's, blue.
Blue?
No, but blue is good. If you ask me, there isn't enough blue food.
Oh, shit! It must have been the string.
No, it's string soup.
Oh, God, they're going to be here any minute.
Well, don't worry, I'm sure they've come to see you and not to orange parfait and sugar cages. Just have a drink.
Yes.
He pours them both a glass.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Did I really run round your lawn naked?
Oh, yes. You were 4 and I was 8.
That's a pretty big age difference. It's quite pervy, really.
Yes, I like to think so.
What are we going to do about this dinner, then?
We have blue soup to start, orange pudding to end, and, well, for main course, we have congealed green gums.
That is capeberry gravy, actually.
Yeah. Do you have eggs?
Yes.
Right. I'll let it do this
now. Ah!
With capeberry gravy.
They stand side by side as he skillfully mixes some eggs.
Wouldn't by any chance have any beetroot cubes, would you? A mini gherkin, stuffed olive.
No, Pam. And besides, I'm busy. Gravy needs sitting.
Surely not. Just stir it, Una.
In the dark, I can hear.
Hey! Happy birthday,
Katie!
So proud.
Shazza, Jude and Tom stop in their tracks.
Hello?
Hello.
Are you joining us?
Yeah, of course.
Mark shrugs coyly. Her friends smile in surprise as Bridget stands next to Mark with a big grin on her face, followed by a nonchalant kind of shrug. Later, they're all struggling with their blue soup.
Excellent.
Mm. It's really delicious. Mm. Really special.
It's really very good.
It really is very nice. So, Mark, why did your wife leave you?
Eat up. 2 more lovely courses to go.
Tom looks up in horror.
Delicious.
I have to say, it really is the most incredible shit. This is the worst of the three.
It does actually remind me of something. It tastes like
marmalade.
Well done, Bridge. 4 hours of careful cooking and a feast of blue soup, omelette and marmalade.
Thank you.
I think that deserves a toast, don't you? To Bridget, who cannot cook, but who we love, just as she is.
To Bridget,
just as she is.
Bridget raises her glass in response and catches the warm look in Mark's brown eyes. Jude goes downstairs to open the door. Mark doesn't take his eyes off Bridget, who blushes, and Tom and Shazza exchange a look of delight. Jude comes back upstairs.
Who?
Sorry. I'm obviously interrupting. Darcy? What brings you here? Oh, right. Yeah. I should have guessed, shouldn't I?
Hi, I'm Tom. It's really good to meet you at last.
Yeah, listen, I just came to, I thought you might be on your own. Huh. What an idiot.
Bridget, unamused, gets to her feet.
Excuse me.
Mark is stony-faced as Bridget goes to talk to Daniel.
I've been going crazy. I can't stop thinking about you. I'm thinking what a fucking idiot I've been. Christ, is that blue soup?
Yes.
That Sunday in the country.
Shazza and Tom light up.
Come outside. This one just going so fast. The hotel and that weekend meeting your parents. I just panicked. You know me. I'm a terrible disaster with a posh voice and a bad character. You're the only one who can save me, Bridge. I need you. Without you, 20 years from now, I'll be in some seedy bar with some seedy blonde.
What about Lara?
Oh, over. Totally fucking finito. Dumped me. Dumped me when she realised I hadn't got over you. I know you're thinking it's just a sex thing, but I promise you, whenever I see that skimpy little skirt on TV, I just close my eyes and listen to all the intelligent things you're saying. I was thrilled that little Kurdish bloke was set free. Bridge. I've
missed you a lot.
Daniel moves to kiss her. Behind them, Mark has picked up his jacket.
I'm going now. Bye.
Mark, stay, will you?
No, I don't think I will.
Well, listen, don't leave on my behalf.
Oh, I think it's about time you and I put this past behind us. Any of you does? At least stay for a birthday drink with me and Bridget. Yeah?
Goodbye, Bridget.
Mark. Why are you here?
Bridge. I just told you why I'm here. Why was Mark Wanker Darcy here? Oh, bloody hell, wait a minute, he's back.
All right, Cleaver, outside.
I'm sorry? Outside? Should I bring my dueling pistols or my sword?
Mark turns and heads for the door again.
All right, hang on.
Daniel puts down the bottle he came with and follows Mark out. The rest of them rush out after them.
I should have done this years ago.
Done what?
This.
Fuck me, that hurt. Oh, what the fuck do you think you're doing?
This.
Oh, Christ, not again.
Tom bursts into a taverna.
Fight!
Fight!
Oh, quick! It's a real fight! Fight!
All right. I give up. Just give me a moment, all right? Just let me get a moment right here, okay?
Daniel whacks Mark over the head with a dustbin lid. The two men grapple in the middle of the street. The white-shirted waiters cheer them on from the pavement. Daniel cleaves to Mark's back, knocking him on all fours.
Whose side are we on?
Mark's, obviously. He's never dumped Bridget for some naked American.
And he said he liked her just the way she is.
Yes, but he also nicked Daniel's fiancé and left him broken horses.
Good point. It's a very hard one to call.
Mark pushes Daniel through the doors of the restaurant.
No.
Oh, yes!
The two men sprawl across a table.
I'm so sorry.
All right.
Mark falls onto another table.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I really am sorry. I will pay.
Enough, Darcy.
Not quite. If that's all right by you.
Oh, you broke my brain,
Happy birthday to you.
A waiter appears with a candlelit green cake in the shape of a temple.
Happy birthday, dear. What's his name? Happy birthday to you.
Daniel joins in the clapping and lunges at Mark. The two men crash through the window. Bridget and her friends rush out of the door.
Jesus. All right. Enough.
Wanker.
Mark turns round and belts Daniel. Daniel falls on his back, blood trickling from his mouth. Outraged, Bridget rushes over.
What is your problem?
My problem?
Yes! You give the impression of being all moral and noble, and normal, and helpful in the kitchen, but you're just as bad as the rest of them.
Well, I can see that I've been labouring under a misapprehension. Very, very foolish mistake. Forgive me.
Slinging his jacket over his shoulder, Mark saunters off down the street, leaving Bridget crouching at Daniel's side, looking mystified. Daniel raises himself up from the ground.
Let's go back upstairs. Come on.
We belong together, Jones. Me, you. Poor little skirt.
Right.
If I can't make it with you, I can't make it with anyone.
Bridget, fiddling with her fingernail, looks at him intently, then slowly averts her eyes and frowns.
I'm not willing to gamble my whole life on someone who's... well, not quite sure. It's like you said, I'm still looking for something more extraordinary than that.
Walking away, Bridget, calm and determined, takes a last look at Daniel over her shoulder and keeps on walking.
December 25th. Weight, 140 pounds, plus 42 mince pies. Alcohol units, oh, thousands.
Bugger off!
Come on.
The carol singers retreat from Colin's house.
This baroque carriage clock is a particular festive favourite of mine, incorporating the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah. Every hour, on the hour.
I can't understand it. The man's actually turned red now.
Merry Christmas, Pamela.
Julian on the TV glances across at Pam, who looks ill at ease and flustered.
Well, I'm going to Bedfordshire.
Bridget, wearing pyjamas, takes off her pink paper hat, picks up her diary and kisses her father goodnight.
Night-night.
Night-night.
Pam appears in the doorway carrying an overnight bag. Bridget looks at her father in his green paper hat and pyjamas as he stares blankly at Pam. Later, husband and wife are sitting side by side with their backs to the fireplace.
The thing is, close up, he was almost purple. He was such a lovely normal colour. He had a filthy temper. And although the jewellery is fabulous and really very reasonably priced, I thought I might ask if I could have another go. I mean, obviously with some effort on your part to pay a bit more attention to me, I do realise what I'm like sometimes. It doesn't help that you and Bridget have your lovely grown-up club of two and always saying, what's silly old mummy gone and done this time? You used to be mad about me. You couldn't get enough of me. What do you think?
I don't know, but I just don't know now. It's been very hard.
Oh, God.
Bridget is watching from the top of the stairs.
I'm joking, you daft cow. Pam, I just don't work without you.
Bridget gives a relieved smile and next morning pads downstairs.
Lovely, lovely,
lovely. Get back up those stairs, young lady. Get dressed.
What for?
For Darcy's ruby wedding party. What for, indeed? Mark will be there. Still divorced.
He's also still deranged. I'm not going.
Poor Mark. This was always a bad time of year for him. You know, his Japanese wife left him on Christmas Day. Cruel race.
Yes, well, I'm not quite sure he didn't deserve it, actually.
She ran off with his best friend from Cambridge. Total scoundrel, apparently. Best man at his wedding. Then Christmas Eve, Mark comes home early from work, finds the pair of them in a most unorthodox position, stark naked, at it like rabbits.
Bridget's mouth drops open in shock.
Just give me 5 minutes.
Colin drives cautiously along a snowy road.
Stop! Stop the car! What? Stop the car! Jack, get out!
Why?
Slow!
She scampers round the front of the car to change places with her father and takes the wheel.
Dad, get in! Mm-hmm. Hurry!
Stop, hurry!
Not too fast.
Bridget careers round corners, and clipping a snow-covered grass verge, she pulls up outside the elegant Darcy mansion. She and her parents hurry into the already crowded party, Bridget feverishly looking around for Mark. Her blonde hair loose on her shoulders and wearing a demurely low-cut black dress, she spots him in the crowded dining room and makes a beeline for him. He turns and sees her.
Can I just...
One moment.
Thank you for inviting me.
I didn't. It must have been my parents.
She notices his red tie covered in snowmen.
So?
Natasha appears.
Hello, Bridget. Didn't know you were coming. Mark, your father wants to begin ASAP.
Oh, does he? Right. Well,
Oh, come on, Mark. Be helpful, please. Caterers have totally screwed up. Does nothing work outside of London? Apparently not.
She turns away.
Well, I'd,
Listen, I owe you an apology. About Daniel. He said that you ran off with his fiancée and left him broken-hearted, he said.
Ah. No, it was the other way around. It was, my wife. My heart.
Sorry. That's why you always acted so strangely around him. And beat him to a pulp, quite rightly. Well done.
Well,
Can we just, pop out there for a moment?
She leads him to a quiet corner of the hall by the ornate staircase and coat rail. He looks nervously over his shoulder.
I just have something that I want to say. You once said that you like me just as I am, and I just wanted to say likewise. I mean, you wear stupid things your mum buys you. Tonight's another classic. You're haughty and you always say the wrong thing in every situation. And I seriously believe that you should rethink the length of your sideburns. You're a nice man, and I like you. If you wanted to pop by sometime, that might be nice.
Mark looks almost miserable as he listens to her.
More than nice.
Right. Crikey.
Ladies and gentlemen, could I have your attention for a moment, please?
Excuse me.
With a sigh, he turns and goes back to the main room.
Of course.
Wife and companion, Geraldine. A toast to her. My wonderful wife, Geraldine. And we, in turn, have been blessed with our son, Mark. He's always made us proud, and we couldn't be prouder of him than on this particular day, because I'm thrilled to announce he has just been invited to be a senior partner in the firm of Abbott & Abbott in New York. He also, incidentally, takes with him his brilliant partner in law, Natasha. And I don't think I'll mind, since we're amongst friends, if I say that someday this remarkably clever girl is going to be something else in law as well.
Bridget stares in blank disbelief.
I begged him not to say anything.
So I ask you now to charge your glasses once again. To Mark and his Natasha.
To Mark and his Natasha.
No! No! It's just that it's such a terrible pity. For England to lose such a great legal brain.
She pierced his foot.
For the people of England, like me and you, to lose one of our top people, our top person, really.
Mark watches Bridget digging a deeper and deeper hole for herself in the packed drawing room.
Well, better dash. I've got another party to go to. It's single people, mainly. Bye.
Glumly, Mark listens to the sound of her retreating footsteps. Later, she sits on a train, her head leaning against the window. Back at her flat, she drops her two bags and looks round with a resigned shrug.
Knew the signs wasn't right. I was stupid for a while. swept away by you.
Mark's plane touches down, and dressed in a well-cut navy overcoat, he walks through the arrivals lounge at the airport.
So confused.
It's snowing as he follows a porter out of the New York terminal.
Was I ever loved by you out of reach?
At home, Bridget writes in the front of her diary and crosses it out. This time she writes Diary of Bridget Jones, Spinster and Lunatic.
We were never meant to be.
Next to her, a tiny Christmas tree. Later, eating pickle out of a jar, she stands at her window. At the table in her kitchen, she sits hunched over her diary.
Yes?
Hi, it's us!
Oh. Great, come on up.
Have we got the most fantastic surprise for you?
No, you're not going to sing.
I mean, not that fantastic, sadly, no, but still pretty good. We've decided we're going to take you to Paris for the weekend so you can forget about everything, particularly forget about Mark Darcy.
I can't believe you said what you said you said.
I know.
There goes my invite to the Darcys next year.
If he didn't leap over the family heirlooms and whip you up in his arms, then sod him.
Yes, he's clearly the most dreadful cold fish.
Exactly. I mean, there's been all these bloody hints and stuff, but has he ever actually stuck his fucking tongue down your fucking throat?
No, not once.
Well, I think we should pack, shouldn't we? If I take that room, you
passport,
take this
Bridget, and pants.
Come on, yep. Let's go.
Pants.
Hurry up, Bridge! We're freezing our bollocks off out here.
Yeah, just the keys.
As her friends pile into their snow-covered mini, Bridget is groping in her handbag outside her front door. Tom.
Come the fuck on, Bridget!
A man in a dark coat appears.
Bridget.
Stop being so bossy.
What are you doing here?
I just wanted to know if you were available for bar mitzvahs and christenings as well as ruby weddings. Excellent speech.
I thought that you were in America.
Well, yes, I was, but I realised I'd forgotten something back home.
Which was?
Well, I realised I'd forgotten to kiss you goodbye. Do you mind?
She shrugs nonchalantly.
Not really, no. So, you're not going to America then?
No, not.
You're staying here?
So it would seem.
From inside the mini.
Friends of yours?
Oh dear, I've never seen them before in my life.
Look, are you coming to fucking Paris or not?
Not.
No fucking room anyway.
No.
Maybe we should just go upstairs for a minute.
It's a very good idea.
Certainly no room for him either. After you, Bridget, with him. Close it down, yeah. Turn us on.
Up in her flat, Mark nuzzles her neck.
Give me just a minute. Keep yourself busy, read something. Lots of very high quality magazines with helpful fashion and romance tips. I'll be right with you.
Mark crosses to the table and picks up a magazine. In her bedroom, Bridget rifles through a drawer.
Definitely an occasion for genuinely tiny knickers.
Next door, Mark notices Bridget's diary open on Friday the 10th of November. On another page, he reads, Mum was really scraping the barrel with Mark Darcy. He acts like he's got a giant gherkin thrust up his backside. As Bridget pulls on some saucy knickers, Mark keeps reading. Mark Darcy is rude, dull. No wonder his clever wife left him.
Right. Right.
Bridget hears the sound of the door closing. She creeps back into her living room.
Mark? Mark?
She opens the window and sees him striding away across the road.
Mark! Mark!
He goes on walking. Dressed in a blue vest and animal print knickers, she spots her open diary on the table.
Oh, shit!
At the bottom of one page it says, I hate him, and in capitals, I hate him again.
Oh, shit.
She dashes out of her flat.
Bollocks!
She runs back inside, puts on her trainers, grabs a cardigan, and runs back out.
Oh! Wish me luck!
Good luck, crazy girl!
With cardigan flapping against her bare thighs, she sprints down the snow-covered street after Mark's fast-receding figure. The streetlights glow against the darkening sky as she races past elegant Christmas window displays, wiping snowflakes from her eyes as she runs. She arrives at a corner, but he's disappeared. She lowers her arms in despair and turns round to see him emerging from a shop.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it. I mean, I meant it, but I was so stupid that I didn't mean what I meant.
Two women walk by, staring at her skimpy winter outfit.
Christ's sakes. It's only a diary. Everyone knows diaries are just full of crap.
I know that. I'm just buying you a new one. Time to make a new start, perhaps.
Bedraggled and wet, Bridget beams at him, and standing on tiptoes, she throws her arms around him. Her cardigan riding up above her knicker line.
I've been searching a long time.
Mark ignores the two women whispering.
Someone exactly like you.
Tentative at first, he and Bridget start to kiss and keep on kissing.
Waiting for you to come through. Someone like you. Make it all
right. Wait a minute. Nice boys don't kiss like that.
Oh, yes, they fucking do. Keep it satisfied. Someone exactly like you.
And as they kiss some more, Mark wraps his long navy coat around her.
Exactly like you.
This audio description was written and read by Veronica Hicks and produced by IMS. The sound engineer was John Etchells. Cast in order of appearance: Bridget Jones, Renée Zellweger; Bridget's mum, Gemma Jones; Una Alconbury, Celia Imrie; Uncle Geoffrey, James Faulkner; Bridget's dad, Jim Broadbent; Mark Darcy, Colin Firth; Mrs. Darcy, Charmian May; Daniel Cleaver, Hugh Grant; Mr. Fitzherbert, Paul Brook; Perpetua, Felicity Montague; Jude, Shirley Henderson; Shazza, Sally Phillips; Tom, James Callis; Handsome Stranger, Charlie Kane; Simon in Marketing, Gareth Marks; Elderly Man, John Clegg; Daniel in a bar with a young woman with curly blonde hair.
I'm delighted. You know, they're both really good friends of mine, and I think it's great that they've found each other at last. Yeah, brilliant. This is Pauline, by the way.
Paula.
Sorry. Yeah.
Salman Rushdie as himself, Natasha Embeth-Davids, Kafka author Matthew Bates, Jeffrey Archer as himself, Julian, Patrick Barlow, Mark Darcy's parents.
Oh, marvellous. Marvellous. Nice, healthy, well-built girl. Can't be doing with a girl who's just skin and bone. Well, I like a woman on the backside who can park a bike in and rest a pint on.
Mark.
Bridget's enormous knickers fill the screen. Richard, her leather-jacketed producer, with a paper coffee cup in his hand.
Well, obviously I'm disappointed. Bitterly disappointed. But, you know, just because someone's got a boyfriend doesn't necessarily mean they won't.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Nope.
Bridget's bottom clearly visible under her short red skirt and sheer black tights. Daniel in a bar looking unshaven is with a dark-haired woman.
No, there's absolutely no business, no hard feelings. I just think it's great that in the same month that Bridge found Dars, I found Melanie.
It's Alan.
Daniel looks uneasily at his Alan. Receptionist Rebecca Charles, Penny Husbands Bosworth, Honor Blackman, Bernard Dominic McHale, Shirley Joan Blackham, Lara Lisa Barbuccia, Interviewer 1, Joseph Alessi, Interviewer 2, Ridian J. Passat, Richard Finch, Neil Pearson, Mr. Sit Up Britain, Paul Ross. Stage manager, Stuart Wright. Magda, Claire Skinner. Woni, Dolly Wells. Cosmo, Mark Lingwood. Alistair, Toby Whitehouse. Cameraman, David Cann. Eleanor Ross Heaney, Lisa Kay. Kaffi Aghani, Suleiman Al-Bassam. The musicians, Millennia Strings. Mr. Darcy, Donald Douglas. Mr. Ramdas, Renu Setna. Paula, Emma Amos. Melinda, Sarah Stockbridge. Crew, production supervisor, Brian Donovan. First assistant director, Stuart Renfrew. Supervising art director, David Warren. Music editor, Mike Hyam. Supervising sound editor, Glenn Fremantle. Post-production supervisor, Jeanette Haley. For working title, Chief Operating Officer, Angela Morrison. Head of Business Affairs, Rachel Holroyd. Production Executive, Sarah Jane Wright. Finance Director, Julian Tomlin. Production Coordinator, Hermione Ninham. Voice and Dialogue Coach, Barbara Beckery. Unit Manager, Claire Tovey. Art Director, Paul Cross. Set Decorator, Shirley Lixenberg. Special Effects Supervisor, David Harris. Aerial Unit Director, Mark Wolf. Stunt Coordinator, Peter Braham. Second Unit, Director, Cilla Ware. Director of Photography, Nigel Willoughby. Sound re-recorded at Pinewood Studios, London, England. Post-production consultancy, Steeple Post-Production Services. Digital visual effects by Double Negative Visual Effects. Additional digital effects, The Computer Film Company. Titles and opticals, General Screen Enterprises. Film and Digital Effects Studios. Color by Technicolor. Negative cutting, Sylvia Wheeler Film Services. Special effects, Snow Business, Computer FX. Scene from Frasier, courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Scenes from Fatal Attraction, courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Footage from Pushing Tim, courtesy of 20th Century Fox Film Corporation. Monarchy Enterprises, BV, and Regency Entertainment USA, Inc. All rights reserved. Lions on TV footage, supplied by Image Bank. Score produced by Maggie Rotford for Aero Dev Associates, Limited. Music orchestrated by Patrick Doyle, Lawrence Ashmore, James Shearman, and John Bell. Music conducted by James Shearman. Music recorded and mixed by Nick Wallage. Music recorded at Air Lyndhurst London and Air Adele Studios London. Soundtrack available on Mercury Records. Songs, Magic Moments, Bacharach and David, performed by Perry Como, courtesy of RCA Records, BMG Entertainment. Can't Take My Eyes Off You, Crew Gaudio, performed by Andy Williams, courtesy of Columbia Records by arrangement with Sony Music Entertainment UK Limited, Sony Music Licensing. All By Myself, Carmen Rachmaninoff, performed by Jamie O'Neill, licensed courtesy of Mercury Records, a division of UMG Records, Inc. Respect, Reading, performed by Aretha Franklin, by arrangement with Atlantic Recording Corp, courtesy of Warner Special Products, Warner Special Marketing UK. Without You, Ham and Evans, performed by Renee Zellweger. Ring, 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 Soul Briscoe Jalan, performed by Aaron Soul, courtesy of Mercury Records Limited, London. Don't Get Me Wrong, Hind, performed by Pretenders, courtesy of Warner Special Marketing, UK. Peter Gunn, Mancini, performed by Art of Noise, licensed courtesy of Warner Music Strategic Marketing, UK. Love, Rosie Swan, performed by Rosie, licensed courtesy of the Island Def Jam Music Group. Stop, Look, Listen to Your Heart, Bell and Creed, performed by Marvin Gaye, Diana Ross, courtesy of Motown Records Company, LP Universal Island Records Limited, licensed by kind permission from the Film and TV Licensing Division, part of the Universal Music Group. Up, Up and Away, Web, performed by The Fifth Dimension, courtesy of Arista Records, Inc. Every Bosser, Dick Walter, courtesy of KPM Music Limited. Me and Mrs. Jones, Gamble, Huff and Gilbert, performed by The Dramatics, courtesy of Universal MCA Music, UK Limited, licensed by kind permission from the Film and TV Licensing Division, part of the Universal Music Group. Fly Me to the Moon, Howard, performed by Julie London, licensed courtesy of Capitol Records, Inc. I'm Every Woman, Ashford Simpson, performed by Chaka Khan, by arrangement with Warner Brothers Records, Inc., courtesy of Warner Special Products, Warner Special Marketing, UK. Kiss That Girl, Crow, performed by Cheryl Crow, licensed courtesy of Interscape Records. Someone Like You, Morrison, performed by Van Morrison, courtesy of Exile Productions, Polydor Limited. Woman Trouble, Craig Hill, David Devereaux, performed by Artful Dodger, courtesy of Warner Strategic Marketing UK. Pretender Got My Heart, Pool Pool, Martin Hogarth, performed by Alicia's Attic, courtesy of Mercury Records Limited, London. Dream Some, Joyce Lynn Overstreet, performed by Shelby Lynn, licensed courtesy of the Island Def Jam Music Group. It's Raining Men, Jabara Shaffa, performed by Jerry Halliwell, licensed courtesy of EMI Records, UK Limited. Christmas Green, Alan Morehouse, courtesy of KPM Music Limited. Ain't No Mountain High Enough, Ashford Simpson, performed by Dinah Ross, courtesy of Motown Records Company, LP Universal Islands Records Limited. Licensed by kind permission from the Film and TV Licensing Division, part of the Universal Music Group. Out of Reach, Gabrielle Shorten, performed by Gabrielle, courtesy of Go Beat Polydor Limited. Have You Met Miss Jones, Roger's Heart, performed by Robbie Williams, licensed courtesy of EMI Records UK Limited. Someone Like You, Morrison, performed by Dina Carroll, courtesy of Mercury Records Limited London. Not of This Earth, Williams Chambers, performed by Robbie Williams, licensed courtesy of EMI Records UK Limited. With thanks to the Corporation of London, the City of Westminster, the residents of Snows Hill, Gloucestershire, Stoke Park Golf Club, Conran Restaurants Limited, Zombori Moldovan Moor Architects London, Amazing Space Location Library, Mont Blanc UK, Mark Muller, Kevin O'Shea, Mary Maguire, Patrick Maguire, Tracy McLeod, Anna Tucker, Ben Hillier, Gavin Maud, and with special thanks to Diet Coke, Haagen-Dazs, IKEA Limited, KS Selection, London Graphic Centre, Pont, Reebok International Limited. Makeup supplied by Max Factor. Dolby Digital in selected theatres. SDDS, Sony Dynamic, Digital Sound, TM in selected theatres. Digital Sound, DTS, TM in selected theatres. Originated on motion picture film supplied by Kodak. Motion Picture Film, MPAA, number 38033. Motion Picture Association of America. Shot at Shepperton Studios and on location in London and the Cotswolds, England. The characters and incidents portrayed and the names herein are fictitious, and any similarity to the name, character or history of any actual persons, living or dead, is entirely coincidental and unintentional. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries, and its unauthorized duplication, distribution or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Working title: Copyright 2001, Universal Studios and Studio Canal and Miramax Film Corp. All rights reserved.